everyone. Welcome to This Is Ro, a podcast dedicated to all my fellow nomads out there. On this show, I'll be sitting down with my friends and chatting about how their life stories have prepared them for who they are today, how they're just figuring it out, connecting the dots, and what the roadblocks are on the way to their version of success. On this week's episode, I'll be sitting down with my friend Carla. We actually met when we both started working at BioBot Analytics. This episode, we'll be diving into celebrating yourself across cultures. And I'm going to let her introduce herself.
Thank you so much, my darling Ro, for inviting me to your show and entrusting me with this incredible platform that you've created so that we can share and just like inspire folks. I am Carla Perot. I am 23 years old, originally from the Caribbean, more specifically, two islands, Haiti and Barbados. Full-blown immigrant. Yeah, I did take Ro's job at BioBot. I currently, by title, am a recruiting coordinator. Depending on the day, it's a whole lot of everything and a whole lot of nothing.
We can give people context.
Sure.
I'll give them the context real quick of like how we became friends. It was known that my job at BioBot Analytics would be very temporary. After maybe like 4 or 5 months, we were actively recruiting for this position to be full-time, the recruiting coordinator. And Carla, I actually was on the interview call with you.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my God, this woman, like she's so impressive. It's how you presented yourself. It was your energy. I had to train Carla for, what was it, like 3 days?
3 days.
And then we just kept it on the calendar to just check in with each other. And then the check-in weekly just became chit-chat. Mm-hmm. Then it was like, oh no, I'm an immigrant. And I was like, I'm an immigrant too. I was like, what kind of immigrant are you? Like as an immigrant, you know that there are so many different faces to an immigrant story to the US, which in my opinion, I'm embracing wholeheartedly and I think is so awesome. What I've noticed from your story and the things that you and I discuss is you have not allowed your trauma to negatively affect your soul, your personality, the things that you care about, how you are to other people, how you treat other people. You're not letting it define you in a way where it holds you back.
Oh gosh, I'm going to tear up because that wasn't always true. And I'm glad that you've met this version of me now that can soundly say yes to this question, to this blanket statement, I should say. Now it's not hindering me. Now I'm not this like lost soul anymore. And that's a direct like testament to like the work I've been doing in therapy, the work that I've been doing in sharing my stories with people like you, friends like you. And yeah, it adds a little bit. Like every time I'm able to be authentically myself and like show up as who I am fully, I feel like my skin gets clearer. You know what I mean? I feel like for so long it was this game of which persona do I play today? Which mask will get me into this door? That essence of faking it till you make it while you're dying inside was me for a really long time. Until I decided I didn't want to do that anymore. That I owed it to myself to sort of like honor the journey that I've been on and understand it for what it is.
And I appreciate you sharing your personas. Just from my side, it feels really comforting to hear someone else say it. Because in the beginning of our conversation, you took Villanelle as an example. Because she has all these different personas of when she goes on a job. Similarly, I am a diehard fan of spy stories. And one of those reasons is because you can be so clandestine, but also people only know you however you present yourself to them or however you have to present yourself to them. Uprooting and shifting, decoding certain cultures and then the cultures within the cultures, like going from one state to another. Personas kind of get you through before you get full access to your authentic true self, essentially.
Right, right.
And mm-hmm. when I hear you say that, I just want to say, as a friend, but also as a fellow uprooted kid who's traveled a lot and just been to so many different places, it's extremely welcoming to know that that's just part of it.
Yeah. That's the experience.
It's just the experience. Like, I don't know how else to say it. I've been shamed over it, where people would tell me, well, you're just not being your real. Why don't you just be you? It's like, well, if I could, if there was space, I would.
I would.
But yeah. I know that there isn't, so therefore I cannot be it. But how do you explain that to someone? When you talk to someone who gets it, it's like being home.
I know. Oh.
And this also ties back into what we're talking about a little bit, is when people don't understand that part of you, whether it's you saying like Caribbean or partially French or Caribbean, French, British, American, like if it's a part that they don't understand, people become really kind of like insecure. Mm. So then it's like, oh no, well then you're just a she. Or you're just American. Because yeah. that's the part that I understand. So that's how I will address you.
Mind blowing.
I always say I'm Dutch Filipino. Yeah, but you like lived in Holland. Like you moved from Holland. So you're Dutch. It's like I've tried to explain this multiple times. But clearly you assholes just think that some white chick is going to show up. And then I'm not. I've given you the foundation to understand that I'm both. And then when they say, well, I thought you grew up in Holland. I go, no, but you get to be Italian American. Explain that to me.
Right. You get to be very into like telling people that Alfredo is not even Italian. I was on this Twitter discourse the other day. And it's this woman losing her mind. She's like, I just found out that chicken Alfredo is not even Italian. It's been a lie this whole time. And I'm like, well, yeah.
Isn't that like the taco, you know, from Taco Bell 2? That's not Mexican. What do you mean?
Yeah, I think people, I think lying and just like completely being oblivious to things is a comfort level thing for yeah. some people.
100%.
And it's not going to change in a day. It might not even change in like, I don't know, a decade or anything like that. But here's to hoping.
But I'd like to think that the way I present myself and in stories and how I introduce myself and encounters, that I make you know that this is who I am. But you and I, in Dutch, we have a saying that you and I could walk through the same door. We can be different and coexist, in other words.
Yes. And I think that's the threat. You know, overall, that is the threat. Because if in any way, all of these criteria that make up who you are feels threatening to somebody else, this innate need to prove that you just belong and deserve because you are, you know? And I think that's one of like my favorite catch-all phrase that I keep coming back to, is that it shouldn't be this hard. You know, to be seen, to be understood, to be respected for who you are, because you just are, you know? That's where that, you know, diversion comes from.
I'm super excited to be chatting about your experience of coming to America. Can you give me a little bit of like a rundown?
Oh my gosh. My experience of coming to America can be told in so many different ways. I feel like now that I'm older, I have so many different lenses and views and perspectives of like what it's taken to get me here. Mom, if you're listening to this, I freaking love you so much. I can't tell the story of how I like came here without, you know, mentioning my mom. So my story is, it can be viewed as like traumatic. It can be viewed as a success story. It can also be viewed, I guess what I'm getting at is it can be viewed for all of the parts, the good, the ugly, the bad. And so I guess I'll start with born in the Caribbean, born to a Haitian mother and a biracial father, lived in Haiti, lived in Barbados, lived in Dominican Republic. And I've always traveled. Like I remember being 8, 9, visiting for the summers here in America, because it was like, I was told it was paradise. But it never really compared to home, to be honest. But what really brought me to settle and put roots here was a result of a natural disaster, the earthquake of Haiti in 2010. And a moment of like terror, like true terror. Like I've experienced that. I've seen so many people die, so many people lose their livelihood, lose their home. And to watch it in real time, I think, is an experience I'll never forget. But I was one of the fortunate ones to have gotten out without a scratch, myself and my family. And fortunately enough, my mom, through all her efforts and hard work, had gotten us, each of her children, a 5-year visa to the United States. And so when it looked like there was no life after that earthquake, no relief was coming, and she's like, you know, we have to get out of here. We survived for a reason. We have to live. We have to keep going. And of course, the process wasn't easy at all. I moved to the Dominican Republic, where I didn't have a home per se anymore, right? So I was living out of a hotel for almost a year before I was able to get safe passage into the United States with my mom, my oldest brother, and my grandma from my dad's side, actually, who was visiting. She's since passed. She passed away in 2017, but I can remember, you know, her at night praying for us to just like get out of there safely and make it to paradise. And so coming here to America, not only was it traumatic, but it would be a very long and tough journey to get to a place where I feel like I've made it. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know how soldiers do it. You know what I mean? Like people go to Afghanistan or like war zones and they come back and they tell you about these stories that you can't possibly believe unless you've lived it. And I resonate with those people. You had to be there, in other words, as the young kids say.
There are so many thoughts that are going through my mind. I'm sure you have mentioned the story before. So it's very geographical, right? Like you can exactly like pinpoint on a map. Like I was here in Haiti, 2010, this happened. Then we moved to the DR, lived in a hotel room, and then we moved to America. Mm-hmm. So let me just backtrack real quick. So you're in the DR for a year. Your grandmother is praying for just you and your brother to have a future, for just mm-hmm. safety, right? Mm-hmm. And then with all that time passed, the four of you were able to get into the U.S. Mm-hmm. And when you got to the U.S., did you go straight to Boston? Is that how you got to Boston?
No. When I got to the U.S., so I have an older brother, never really knowing him beyond like, oh, he'd come for 2 weeks out of the summer. He was already in the States, lived with his dad's side of the family. And so when we entered the Americas, I remember having to sleep in the airports because our flight was delayed. Were these immigrant people with like very little English to get by, and having gone through this like this long journey of what feels safe now, like inside of an airport was the first time I felt safe in a year, but I was lost. We left Chicago, finally made it to Miami, and we got picked up. It was like, I remember it's 5 a.m. We finally get there and it's pouring rain. My mom's best friend, she was kind enough to let us stay with her for 6 months. So I was there for 6 months before my whole life was uprooted again. So that sense of stability, that sense of like belonging, it never really sank in for me for a really long time. And then I moved to Boston, where it is completely different. Like at least in Florida, there were some things that reminded me of home. like the palm trees, like how high the trees are, the sunlight. Where we stayed has like a large population of like Caribbeans, Haitians, Jamaicans, Puerto Ricans. And so at least there was a sense of like, oh, this is akin to home. Like there's even a little town in Miami called Little Haiti. And if you go there, you know, it's like being transported instantaneously to something that feels familiar. Because I landed in Miami February 1st. So I just celebrated an anniversary. I just celebrated my 13th year in America. So 6 months later in summer, like July, August, my mom was like, we have to go. Because I don't see how we survive here.
I'm curious, was that because of like your own community that was there, or was it kind of like, we don't have the bandwidth to help you? Was it like a money thing?
It was definitely a money thing. It was definitely a money thing. As grateful as I was for those 6 months, there was always going to be some kind of expiration date to how long we could stay there without pulling our own weight. Because everything is monetary, you know what I mean? You stay somewhere, you're expected to pay, you know? And my mom couldn't work. She didn't know any like strong English or anything like that. Because I had moved so many times in the span of like less than 2 years, I had difficulty with speech. So I would say something and then Dominican Spanish would come out of my mouth because that was a language I was learning. And then I was learning English to be able to go to school in 2 weeks. And then I still had to like retain that essence of like what makes me Caribbean and not American. And so it was a lot going on for 10-year-old Carla at that time.
I know that you speak, that you're multilingual. Can we just get into that really quick?
To this day, I can still fluently speak Haitian Creole, of course, French, Spanish, Portuguese, thanks to my ex-boyfriend. Italian, I just picked that up because I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a white person in like summer in Tuscany.
And then lastly, you speak English.
I speak English.
From Haiti, we go to the DR. From DR, we go to Chicago. Chicago, we go to Miami. And from Miami, we go to Boston.
Boston, baby.
And from when of your arrival in the United States did you go to school?
It was a 2 week turnaround between like, because I came here with nothing, no transcript, nothing. I left with literally a bag of clothes. That's all I had in my possession. So they're like, yeah, you need medical. You need like all of this crap that I never like thought about, you know, like back home, I just went to school. Like it was somewhere for my parents to put me while they go work. We didn't need all this stuff. So here you need medical, you need a transcript, you need an address, you need blah, 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 blah. And as my mom, my only parent, who's very overwhelmed trying to figure all of that out, I had one job. It was to learn English, to learn how to speak again. By the way, I was mute for almost a year as a result of like that trauma that I experienced during the earthquake. So when I came here, my mom was like, I know it's hard. I know it's unfair to ask, but I need you to snap out of it. And so I knew that a new life was starting for me the moment I landed in America. And I had a job to do. I had a part to play. And so while my mom was like contacting any and everybody who would help her to try and get me insurance to go to the doctor to get immunization, while she was trying to, you know, beg for like proof of address to like send me to the closest school available. I was parked in front of a TV learning how to speak English.
Okay. Do you by any chance just remember what show you would watch?
I would watch a lot of like SpongeBob and Hannah Montana. But I remember it was like BBC channel. They have a British accent. So to this day, like when I speak certain words, they come out very unlike what a Caribbean should sound like. And that's because of the way I learned English. So within 2 weeks, I was able to pick up a lot of English and be fluent for school.
A 10-year-old in sixth grade, thanks.
Yeah, so we moved to Boston and it's another culture shock. I understand English, I speak English, but I don't understand social cues or American social cues. So that was a fun time. I moved to Medford, Massachusetts, in Boston when I moved. Pretty white neighborhood, and we were the only family. Actually, two families. Like, the house next to us also was a Haitian household. So I had at least those two houses to sort of, like, feel tethered to. And I quickly realized from that point on how harshly I was going to be judged for everything. Because those 6 months in Florida, suddenly I wasn't the Haitian child anymore. Like, I wasn't behaving the way a Caribbean child was. I was too Americanized. So my neighbors would be like, yeah, like, she wants to go to the store all the time. She wants to, like, be outside playing all the time. Mind you, I'm 11. Yes, of course I want to be outside playing. What else am I going to do? But the Caribbean way is, if it's a school day, your head should be in those books, studying seven chapters ahead. You know what I mean? Like, there's no time for fun. There's no time for play. So any time that I wanted to be with kids around my age and, like, do things, it was like frowned upon. So yeah.
As a 23-year-old woman, how has the uprooting and the constant change, how has it positively affected you?
I'm like, sometimes I sit and I like really reflect. I'm like, I went through this. I tell people, you know, I've been poor, I've been rich, and I've been everything in between. And I'm really glad that through all of these transition, I didn't lose my soul. You know, I can still relate to people. I have tremendous respect for the different paths that people have walked, you know, because I've been through it too. And so I think, how has all of these things impacted me and like changed the outcome in like a really positive way? Or if any of your listeners, are keeping like track on Haiti right now, but it's a shit show. It's a nightmare. And I think if my mom wasn't calculating and smart and just took this motherhood shit real seriously, I could be down there doing God knows what.
Shout out to mom, by the way.
Shout out to mom. Yeah. So how has this impacted me positively? I am a homeowner now. I have a home. I finally feel like I'm in a place where I feel tethered to people and things again. I have really great friends. Some of them share the same cultural background as me and some of them don't. But there's still so much relatability. There's still so much we have in common, me and you. I can be a role model to my siblings. Like, I shouldn't, because they should know where they're from. Like, they should know their roots and stuff. But I thank God they weren't born back home and to the sort of things that I've had to experience.
And I, here's the other thing too, right? Is like, I also appreciate you sharing that the version that I got to meet and that I am in the presence of, it's a direct result of you giving yourself the grace to become as true to you that you deserve to be.
Yeah. Shout out to my therapist. I won't like drop her name, but I talked about tethering myself to things. And I feel like therapy has been one of those things. And this quest for showing up authentically, for belonging, for for all the positive things that I have in my life right now, I owe it to therapy, to be honest, because I had to understand myself first if I wanted to be understood. She goes, so what's on your mind? That's a love language for me. It can be the silliest thing. It could be the most heartbreaking thing. I have a platform to share it, and it's just mine. And given that it's time is something you can never get back. So it's that much more valuable.
I don't know about your culture. I know for me, being Dutch and Filipino, from the Filipino standpoint,
you don't air your business out.
Until what? I always say the rug is just thick. My rug is thick. It's such a culmination as well of like, well, someone needs to break the cultural expectations or lack thereof, right?
Yeah.
And then in the Dutch culture, it's very like, surprisingly, I worked with a lot of people who had a burnout. And when you think about the way the Dutch have it is like 5 to 6 week paid vacation, mandatory 2 weeks that are stuck together. And they're like, oh no, you know, I get therapy or whatever. But then it also gets dismissed. So in the one culture, you don't talk about it. The other culture, they talk about it, but then at some point they're tired of hearing it. So they just be like, well, can you just get over it? When I hit 25, they call it your quarter of midlife crisis. I only laugh because it's so obvious, right? It was so obvious. And my therapist, actually, I went, shout out to PsyQ International because they were phenomenal. I used to be an expat child. I'm a third culture kid. But it was created for those in mind who are third culture and expat multicultural. So they have therapists who are all multicultural and multilingual.
Love it.
Which is fantastic.
Inclusivity, baby.
I know. And she goes, I don't want to scare you. She goes, but my professional opinion about your diagnosis is not just heavily depressed and anxious, but you have such thing called identity crisis. I was like, what does that even mean? So of course I laughed. And she said, identity crisis, as in you don't know what you're identifying as. And that stress and that not knowing what you are.
It's taking you under.
Right under. And you can't say that for insurance purposes. So it was just depression. But we all knew that that's what I was being treated for. And I have to also give a lot of credit to all the psychologists I've worked with in the past, is them having the space for me to just voice the things that you and I are talking about today, of just how difficult being biracial, or how difficult it is to move across cultures, or integration. And then there's integration within integration, right? Like, people just forget. And for everyone who is listening, has had a job, or has been new at some point at a job, that integration times 100. And so for anyone wondering, should you or should you not get a psychologist? It's always good to try out. You can always stop, you know, like you can always stop. If I only had like some type of discount code, because I would go with psychologist/psychiatrist and or a life coach, because I feel like it just helps you deal with your past, make some form of peace, accept, and then plan for your future. So you were a kid when you arrived to the United States. My question is, as a woman in your early 20s, what has your journey been like transitioning into your womanhood in America?
One word for it, rough. Rough.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, this in itself is a loaded question. What has that transition been like into womanhood? And I want to say, I feel like, and it's sad, like I'm going to say it, and I know it's a sad thing to say, but like, I feel like from the moment I stepped here, I stopped being a child, you know, because there's only so much that you can see without, you know, without it completely changing the makeup of who you are.
The innocence of the child, the innocence of your inner child.
Gone, completely gone, you know, becoming a master at IT, because I was my mother's only hope, essentially. You know what I mean? Like, the thing was education. You can never go wrong with education, because I quickly realized, I think I was like 13 when I knew the value of a dollar, and that's because I had to earn it. As much as I like rag on winters and Boston, like there's a story there for me. Another positive story of how I've earned those dollars. I would shovel people's snow. I would be damn near like paralyzed in my little tippy toes and fingers. But I was like, this is gonna help. And it wasn't an expectation that was put on me by my mother or anything like that. It was that I understood. There was a system in place. And if you were the odd one out, then gosh, it sucks to be you. But I knew what I had to do.
I mean, you were a kid, right? Right. It's like selling your lemonade on your lemonade stand.
Yeah. I wish I'd done that. I wish that's the route I'd gone. But
the
like,
lemonade one? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And I quickly realized just like where my brain could take me. I was 13, very smart. Like I have a really high IQ. But yeah, I was 13 doing college homework for money. I was like, oh, you want an A+? You want an A+ on this history paper? Yeah. Here's what it's going to cost you. Fully hustled. yeah. And then I was 15 helping somebody through med school. You know, it's just like the evolution of that womanhood. When I say I've been so many things, I really have been so many things. And they remain part of me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I had to tap into those skills and like those things for survival. But I learned something about myself in the process. It's that I like being an artist. I like being a brainy nerd who can research anything under the sun. I like being able to piece words together and create like this beautiful story that can take you into another planet. I like being a writer. You know what I mean? Like a lot of the things that I've learned about myself in this journey of womanhood, I want to say is almost unintentional. But I'm grateful to have learned those parts of myself.
I guess I forget. I forget with how many people that I speak to who do not have this background as an immigrant with such a story as yours. I'm Filipino. But that in the contrary, that is really the element of that immigrant American story that a lot of the born Americans don't have. Common is knowing how hard you have to work, that it's not just given to you, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you had an accent, like an actual like foreign accent, that within itself could set you back 10 steps. I had someone ask me when I got my first like longer term job. It was February 1st, 2020.
Cheers to February 1st. I mean, what is that?
I don't know. And this one kid goes, he like tells me a story that he's like Dominican American and whatever, and he's been here for 2 years working this whatever job. I was like, okay, cool. I was like, I'm Ro, and I'm always like so transparent, like I'm an immigrant, I came here a year and change ago, this and that. And then he was like, oh yeah. And he goes, how did you get this job? Mind you, this job was like a $50,000 a year job that had to work weekends. Like it really wasn't fabulous or anything. Like I hardly ever made, like I couldn't even pay off my cash credit card with that pay. And I was like, I applied.
Such a foreign thought.
You know, because he had like a bit of like a way, the way he said it. And I was like, oh, I know exactly what it is that you're trying to say. Thank God. I don't know how else, but thank God I speak and sound like an American. Because that's one less thing that I would have to worry about than getting the respect. Doesn't matter who you're getting respect from, right? Like the rich guy, the poor guy, the guy in the middle. It's just any reason to be
discounted. Mm-hmm.
And also this idea of like, you know, you're taking our jobs.
Yeah. Do you watch Abbott Elementary?
I have not.
Oh my gosh. It's such a cute little show.
I like her.
Yeah. And I think, you know, she's been a household name for a really long time, but it wasn't like until this year that she's really been getting her flowers, having been on this show and now going back to Broadway and stuff. But I think she just won an award, and her speech was so moving. And I think it went something like this. They don't have to respect you. They don't have to remember you. They don't owe you anything, essentially. But you just remember who you are every time. And I feel like that can be traced to so many moments in life.
Oh, yeah.
You know? You 100%. Say, thank God I have an American accent, because otherwise the implication is that you had to do something other than apply to get to that space, you know?
Oh, yeah. 100%. And, like, here's the thing too, right? Like, being that I don't want to say I had a British accent. I just sounded more European. And then my last 2 years of high school, I was in the Philippines in an American school. So naturally, they want you to sound like them. Mm-hmm. And what do? Under peer pressure, you just want to fucking fit in. So whatever, I start talking
it
like an American.
Makes no sense.
No problem, right? But I lived in Holland for 10 years before I came here. And I've told this in my other stories where the judgment of being American didn't work in my favor. It'd be like, oh, you're American? Because Americans aren't loved everywhere. So it's that, oh, ew, like,
can
I don't want to get to
it?
Know you. Which is very unfortunate. But when I moved to Holland after the American school in the Philippines, I had to do a lot of like proving that I wasn't by speaking Dutch. So I would have to prove it with another language, right? Like the proof.
Yeah, with me being multilingual, people constantly test me and like put me on the spot. They're like, oh, give us a phrase, give us a little something, say something. I'm like, well, what do you want me to say? Like, are you going to participate in this conversation?
I always end up translating how the question. So if they say like, can you say something in Dutch? I will say in Dutch, this question is really annoying.
I start saying terrible things.
Yeah. It also comes from a place though of like, for those people that ask and that don't have a similar background at all or are multilingual or anything like that, you don't understand how triggering that question is and that approach is. Because yeah. I found from, I don't know how you feel about this, but I found that often, more often than not, it's a test to my worth for you. To whether or not you want to speak to me, whether or not I could be part of a team, to whether or not you're going to label me as cool or annoying or I just don't get it. You know what I mean? Like I'm confused to what type of game we're playing. And now I'm in a place where I will beat you to the punch with a joke, first of all. They're like, oh, so you're Dutch? I go, yeah, I am the epitome of a white woman that is Dutch. And you are? And it's like this weird discomfort slash it could be a joke because I have learned that I have to beat you to the punch of the joke because I don't want to be the pun of your joke.
Yeah, that in itself is like a survival tactic.
That comes with the territory, unfortunately. And here's also the other thing, right? Like I always tell everyone in coaching, my clients, my husband friends, like, I have no problem you asking me a question that gives you more discomfort than me because it doesn't really give me discomfort, right? But don't think that you can come at me with your prejudgments or your opinions about can I have dual citizenship or should my child be able to identify as whatever the fuck? Because that's none of your business. And now I say that. That is none of your business. You do not get access to me that way. Mm-hmm. But if you have a question and it's not as inappropriate for me to answer, I'm always happy to answer. And I found that people now are more inclined to ask me those questions.
I mean, we know on the flip side of that, I'm sure you've heard the angry black woman, the emotional black woman.
Yes.
I'm sure you've heard it all.
Do you find that those labels like the angry black woman, that loud black woman, does that stem from this place of like, I just want to be equally heard and respected, but because you're not giving me that, I have to bring my tone up to here?
So I'll answer this, but I also want to go back a little bit.
Okay.
I'd never heard a lot of the terms that I've like come to understand were completely new to me. Like I was never ever, I've never in life before I moved to America heard in my home country, you're the angry black woman. You're being emotional right now. Never heard that. So when I came here, I'm like, what does that mean to y'all? And why is it negative to be angry? Angry is a feeling. You have to express that or else you're just gonna like, it's gonna come out one way or another. So why are you not doing the work of listening, of shutting up more? And why is it on me to parse my emotions so that you're comfortable? And so even in like moments of conflict, I can never bring myself to like be so out of control. And I don't know if that's just like now anymore. I don't know if that's just like a personality thing or if it's something that I've adopted. We talked about personas. If that cool, calm, collected in any freaking situation thing is something I've adopted as a result of hearing that you're emotional, you're being such a woman right now, you're being the angry black woman, you're disrupting the vibes kind of thing. If that's in an attempt to fit some kind of mold, that I am the cool black girl instead of the angry black girl, that I can still put you in your place without yelling. You know what I mean?
I wonder if it's like a combination of both.
More than likely. Because who wants to be labeled as the black sheep? I find it easier to laugh my way out of like difficult interactions.
Yeah.
I'm like, as a result, have become very unconfrontational. And like you, I didn't learn boundaries until like, gosh, I'm still learning boundaries. Sometimes I wonder if I was back home, if I would, you know, have more of a voice because nobody's checking my tone back home. Right. Nobody's right. Gonna label me as something that I'm not.
I'm not gonna say that by any means that I know what that feels like, right? To be labeled specifically that way. The way they would get me back in Holland was I'm bilingual. When you are tired, under pressure, any of those things, it's very possible for either the one language to cancel out the other one or for them both to cancel each other out. And then you're either left with a third language that nobody understands or just no language, right? And I was working in a casino, which was very high paced. And sometimes you would have to take a bunch of orders in, remember them, put them into whatever the system, and then walk orders out and just, you know, you have to like be everywhere at once. And there were times where that's when the translation would happen, when you get tired. Mm-hmm. My translator would just malfunction. So then I would say it in English, which, by the way, everybody knows. And then they would get me by saying, you know, you're in Holland, right? We speak Dutch here. So why don't you say that again in Dutch? I thought you were Dutch. Well, you are Dutch, right? Then why don't you just speak Dutch? And I don't want to dismiss anything that you just said. And I don't want to say that it's the same. It's just, it's a label used to dismiss what's really going on.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree.
With you or me as the receiver, kind of like a victim to your power play, your dominance.
Yeah.
And what you're exactly to your point, if you were to have been in the Caribbean, of course these labels don't exist because that's just that, like I've never labeled myself as much as I have since coming to America.
Like Caribbean people do this thing. They're not going to go like after you in like this racial way. If you're having any sort of like argument with like a Caribbean person, at no point is race going to be a thing. It's going to be you as the person that's a thing. How you're presenting. That's going to be, you know, the insults in that conversation.
Well, you and I can't change how other people react, right? Because there's a difference between a response and a reaction. So we can't control how other people react to us, but we can control or adjust and adapt to how we want to respond. And a lot of these quick like labels, like, oh, you must be on your period, or like, oh, you're being like an angry black woman. It's like, that's the best you got. That's the best you got. That's it. That's all you have. That's all you could think of whatever is going on in this conversation. That this emotional reaction is an actual reaction to something that you may have said, or like a thing that may have happened before we entered into this conversation. Mm-hmm. So the discomfort of you actually knowing how to ask open-ended questions to try and get to that source of a response or reaction or something that you may not understand is discomfort.
Some people have not reached that level of like emotional intelligence. I think that's what's holding us back as a race. Because imagine if our brains truly matured when scientifically it says it should. Imagine the elimination of like traumas and like personal upbringing didn't impact our abilities to sort of like just be logical and factual and empathetic when needed. Yeah. Imagine all that. Like, we'd be such a peaceful race, you know? I think the lack of awareness or sense of self, whenever you speak to someone, you know, people are just passionate beings about a lot of things. I think if everybody had that part of their brain that fully developed and just showed up to those confrontations or those situations and interactions, so much would be different.
I hear you're just a warrior.
Oof, warrior.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's emotional when I say it, only because you had all the opportunities to not love, to not want to be loved, to not be kind, to not want to give this country an opportunity, to give the people in it an opportunity to show up the way you are for yourself, but also your peers. Like, you had enough reasons to not be that, and you chose the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah.
As an outcome. That's why I say warrior.
I love that. Thank you. That was beautiful. Think that where I am now is deserving, you know, like I've earned it. And I think I'm not alone in that feeling.
I'm curious to know, what are like some of your hopes and wishes for yourself for your future?
I think if I had a time machine and could go back to 10-year-old me in that airport, lost, I think I would hug her. And I think I would tell her that it's going to be so fucking hard. You're going to hate yourself. You're going to hate your mother. There is so much about this journey that's going to be unpleasant. But what you've earned at the end of it, my gosh, nothing else compares. Because today, to sit in front of you, I'm not saying by any means that I'm like this complete picture, right? Like, we're all a work in progress. And I'm sure the canvas has so much room for so many other colors and things, you know, to be implemented. But I sit here before you and I am whole today. So my hopes for myself is that as I experience more things, as I'm being exposed, you know, to the new order of the world, because 5 years from now, I don't want to imagine like how different this world is going to be, you know. But I hope that I continue to radiate positivity. Like, I'm happy. I have so many reasons not to be. And I think happiness is a choice that you have to make every day. And it's difficult to do it every day. But I think it's so important to take time to celebrate yourself, even on the days you don't want to. That's a spin. That's a nice dot at the end of the day.
Before I let you go, before we wrap up this beautiful conversation, is there anything that you're currently working on or doing that you're extremely proud of?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of things in flux for me all the time. My lifelong dream, because again, I'll go back to that quote I said, I've been rich, I've been poor, and I've been everything in between. And I truly mean that. And having lived in 4 countries and sort of like what my journey has been it's made me so attuned with, you know, people who are discarded or misplaced or just lost, like just a wanderer in the world. And so my lifelong dream, and something that I've been working on, pouring a ton of research into, is to have my own nonprofit organization.
I cannot wait to witness and support you in your journey of figuring that out.
Thank you.
That is something bigger than you and me, and it's going to take a collective of individuals. And I really want to thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you and for having me. Oh my gosh.
For just being so authentically you and for sharing your story. And I hope as well for anyone who's listening that there is something in either one of our stories that resonates.
Because this episode is about honoring yourself and celebrating who you are, I feel I would be remiss to not celebrate this incredible thing that you're doing, which is giving a voice in a world where it's very easy to miss so many things, to have a platform that's able to capture not just feelings, but people. I think you're doing amazing, and you owe it to yourself to like take a victory lap at some point.
So it's also showing how what I wanted for over 2 years is finally here, A, and B, it's saving me from myself, which I'm super proud to say, but also to be able to share the space with other people. Because I just feel like I can't wait for other people to give me the space to share the story and to share the perspectives. Mm-hmm. And there is enough space for all of us to try and do that for ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, like we can all coexist. There is enough space for us, you know? And really, I hope for anyone who is still sticking around, there is, in my opinion, it isn't about teaching as much as just sharing. Mm-hmm. You are your own teacher. At some point, your parents can only parent you as long as they can. Teachers can only teach you as much as they can when you're in school. Mm-hmm. After a while, it's your own responsibility to teach yourself. And I mm-hmm. think we can do that by just sharing stories. And that's all really that's all I want to do. I just want to share stories and perspective. I think what we have discussed today is just one part of what it is to celebrate yourself. Even though it's hard, even though it's painful, even though it's partially traumatizing, to be able to acknowledge our own story is a big part of celebrating who you are. Because mm-hmm. without the story, you're not who you are today either, right?
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself.
So with that, I will say until next time.
Until this next is Ro. Time.
That's how I always end my shit. If you'd like to follow along, you can find me at This Is RO Podcast on Instagram. And be sure to check back every Wednesday for new episodes. Much love. Until next time, this is Ro.